Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. The beasts of Pellucidar. Well, first of all, let's go to the manufactured beasts, and there is one within the public domain. And it is called the Iron Mole, which I think I mentioned earlier. David and Perry drive to the Earth's core in what Perry invents and calls the Iron Mole. It is a big tank. It has a corkscrew nose that drills through rocks. And that's something worth mentioning, because that's the kind of steampunk kind of contraption that Pellucidar would, that would kind of go really well in Pellucidar. Certainly if you're trying to capture any kind of flavor of Pellucidar, then going with constructs and golems and clockwork beings from any one of your favorite bestiaries or monster manuals or Tome of Beasts would be perfect. It would work out quite nicely. And of course, Kobold Press famously has quite a bit of that, like Zobek. The Zobek setting has a bunch of clockwork types of stuff, so you could go nuts with that, and it would fit right into place in Pellucidar, not just because of the Iron Mole, but because of some of the later stories from Pellucidar. But that's not in the public domain, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just saying, flavor wise, it would kind of fit in, and certainly you can't get any more steampunk than Jules Verne, and by extension, Edgar Rice Burroughs. Okay, so there are the Dyryths, a colossal beast closely resembling a bear, as large as the largest elephant and with great forepaws armed with huge claws. Its nose or snout depended nearly a foot below its lower jaw, almost a rudimentary trunk. The giant body was covered by a coat of thick, shaggy hair. It has a thunderous roar. And from what I have read online, this is a Megatherium, M-E-G-A-T-H-E-R-I-U-M, Megatherium. So you can look up Megatherium if you want to see kind of what the Dyryth is supposedly like. It can pull trees down with its brute strength because it is, despite its great size, an herbivore. So it'll trundle through forests and knock down trees, and characters will think that they're being hunted by something horrible and ferocious, and it turns out that actually they're just in the way of a very hungry leaf eater. So that's the Dyryth. There is also the Hyaenodon. Now, the Hyaenodon are big wolves. That's all they are, is big, great, big wolves. Very ferocious. They run in packs. They will tear you limb from limb. However, they can be domesticated. And in fact, in Pellucidar, there is one named Raja, or one that gets named Raja, that gets domesticated and is a faithful companion. So for the ranger types or the druid types, a Hyaenodon would be perfect. That's not the official name, the Hyaenodon. It's just what Perry ends up calling them. I think there's a different name that sometimes get to call that they sometimes get called, but they call it Hyaenodon so much that just kind of stuck for me. There is the plesiosaurs of the Lias, or the Lias, the L-I-A-S. Around a great salt sea there dwell seal-like creatures with long necks that stretch more than 10 feet above their enormous bodies, and whose snake-like heads are split with gaping mouths bristling with countless fangs. And those are, from what they say in the book, basically plesiosaurs. There are also tandarazes, or Tandors of the sea, right? Because AZ means a sea or a river. So these are the Tandarazes. There are they are huge tortoises, pretty much, which paddle about with other big reptiles. It is not explicitly described how ferocious these things are. All you need to know is that they're very, very large, and presumably they could be ferocious if required to be. There are also ichthyosaurs, which, if I recall correctly, also appears in Jules Verne. Locally, though, these are called Asdyryths, so sea Dyryths, Dyryths of the sea. They resemble whales with the head of an alligator. They battle either the plesiosaurs or the tandarazes, or probably both. There's a passage describing sort of how these creatures interact, and I wasn't 100% sure which they it was talking about, whether it was talking about the plesiosaurs or the tandarazzas, but I'm going to assume that an ichthyosaur, if you look at it and imagine it being a very large creature that exists, I could see it battling both or either, really, on any given day. There's also something called a saddock, S-A-D-O-K. They don't really describe it in either of these two books, so I'm not sure what it is, but I wanted to mention the name. And there's also a ramphorhynchus. That's R-H-A-M-P-H-O-R-H-Y-N-C-H-U-S. And again, I don't exactly know what that is either, so I'm not going to comment. Now, we also have the tarag, or tarag. Did I just say the same thing twice? T-A-R-A-G, tarag. It's the giant tiger of the inner world. And here's the description. And now, as the two stood frozen in terror, I saw the author of that fearsome sound creeping stealthily into view. It was a huge tiger, such as hunted the great boars through the jungle's primeval when the world was young. In contour and markings, it was not unlike the noblest of the Bengals of our own world, but as its dimensions were exaggerated, the colossal proportions, so too were its colorings exaggerated. Its vivid yellow fairly screamed aloud. Its whites were as eiderdown, its blacks glossy as the finest anthracite coal, and its coat long and shaggy as a mountain goat. That it is a beautiful animal there is no gainsaying, but if its size and colors are magnified here within Pellucidar, so is the ferocity of its disposition. He mentions a bow, B-O, in that passage, and as it turns out, apparently there's a thing that we call a bow, a prehistoric bow, B-O, but what they call it in Pellucidar is a thag, T-H-A-G. It's basically a giant bull with cloven hooves and a tail that lashes viciously from side to side. And when I say viciously, I do mean pretty vicious. It's pretty, I got the impression that the tail could deal quite some damage. So I didn't get the impression that it was just for flavor, the tail lashing from side to side. I could be wrong, though. Also, up in the mountains, there's the polar bears, which I don't know the local name of, but they're basically polar bears, or maybe they're ice deereths, I'm not sure. They're up in the mountains, gigantic bears prowl for much-needed prey, and they do it, like, all the time. They're apparently extremely hungry animals because they were the main threat in the icy mountains. There are also fish in all of the rivers, including warm-blooded fish and whale-like creatures. There are many, many reptilian beasts all over the place. Here's a description of one. And then about him coiled the great slimy folds of a hideous monster of that prehistoric deep, a mighty serpent of the sea with fanged jaws and darting forked tongue, with bulging eyes and bony protuberances upon its head and snout that formed short, stout horns. There are thipdars, that's T-H-I-P-D-A-R-S, those are pterodactyls. They are interestingly used by mahars as mounts. And I say interesting because a lot of the mahars, some of the mahars anyway, have wings, but from what I can tell, they don't actually utilize them. Or maybe they do only for short distance. I'm not sure which, but they do definitely ride pterodactyls. I don't know. I find that very heavy metal. Take it as you will. I think it's pretty cool. There's also a labyrinthodon. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's basically a big alligator, from what I can tell. I'm not really too good at biology or, you know, ancient biology, but to me it looked like a really big alligator. So that's a labyrinthodon. There's also an orthopy, which I don't exactly know what that is. And then finally, last but not least, are the leedi. These are enormous quadrupeds, 80 or 100 feet long, with tiny heads perched at the top of very long necks. Their heads must have been 40 feet from the ground. The beasts move very slowly, that is, their action was slow, but their strides cover such a great distance that in reality they travel considerably faster than a man could walk. They are the mounts of people from Thoria. So you'll remember that Thoria is the land in and around the land of the Awful Shadow. And so the Thorians have tamed and ride around on what to me sounds like a brontosaurus. I don't know. I mean, and again, maybe someone with a better knowledge of ancient reptiles would know better from that description. But to me, that just says, okay, brontosaurus. And maybe there is something possibly better than a brontosaurus to ride around on, like a stegosaurus or something. But either way, they're big, big quadrupeds. I mean, it sounds like a brontosaurus to me. And they're being ridden by these warriors of Thoria. And that's got to be pretty terrifying. And it's pretty interesting, I think, that the Thorians haven't gone around conquering other lands, much less Mahars, because they've got dinosaurs that they ride. It seems pretty significant to me. But they kind of keep to themselves, and since they do dwell in and around the land of the Awful Shadow, I get the impression that a lot of other places, a lot of other creatures, Mahar, Sagoth, human, or otherwise, I think they kind of stay away from that area, because it's considered dismal, possibly dangerous, and mysterious. And that's it. That is the public domain portion of the realm of Pellucidar. I think one thing that I might mention here that didn't really fit into any other place was the effect of the arrival of modern man. And that is, by the second book, they've introduced things like gunpowder and a rifle and a revolver. So you have some interesting prose about how a Stone Age or a pre-Iron Age, I guess, person might, and even creatures might react to the presence of a gun. And that was interesting, because I've often wondered in, for instance, in Pathfinder, I mean, in D&D as well, but I feel like in Pathfinder, it's very much accepted that gunslingers are a thing. Like, it's not super uncommon in Pathfinder for that to be on the table, because there are not in the core rule book, but not too far away from the core rule book, there's a class for that sort of thing. So it's pretty easy to integrate gun mechanics into your game. And I've always kind of wondered about whether or how gunfire would be viewed in a fantasy setting. And I think that the immediate reaction would be, well, it's a form of magic. It is a form of kind of mechanized magic. And it may as well be, right? I mean, chemistry to most of us is magic, so might as well just consider a device that kills from a distance with an almost unseen missile. That may as well be magic. It's just very loud, and it's loud and dirty and messy. But getting to read about it in these books, I felt like it really was kind of saying something about the effect of modern technology on a society that basically has no technology. I mean, some of the groups of humans in Pellucidar, possibly all in these two books at least, hadn't even made bows and arrows, so they weren't even that, you know, range. Killing at a range was not even something it wasn't even possible at all. It was just not even something that they could do. So to see it in the form of bows and arrows, and then quick progression to see it in the form of gunfire, must have been pretty world changing. And indeed it is, and that's kind of addressed a little bit in the second book. Now, that said, we do know that Mahars themselves have maybe not magic, maybe psionics. Or maybe it's just that they happen to be in tune with more of reality than the average human is, and so they can leverage these things. I mean, they have hypnotism. They can do a very profound form of mind control. And at one point, the main character, David Innes, has fallen into this pool of water where there had been Mahars recently. And the first thing that comes to his mind is, what if I'm not alone? What if they've hypnotized me and I believe that I'm alone right now? And in reality, they're just, I might not even have a right arm right now. They may have just ripped that off. They might be nibbling on my face right now. So it's a danger. There is magic in this world of sorts, whether it's psionic powers or whether it's good old-fashioned gunfire. Pellucidar isn't just sticks and stones. It's got a lot more going on there once modern man invades. But there are dinosaurs. So it's a great, great setting. It is the setting of the jungles of Chult. It is the setting of the Mwangi Expanse. It is those things, except this is the original version of both. And hopefully this episode has helped you envision it and get a clear picture of what it was all about, and maybe gives you some ideas for your own weird tales. Thanks for listening. that's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.